Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
How you doing, internet? It is August 18th, 2017, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio. Austin is taking a summer Friday, and I am very glad that he's taking a summer Friday. That is a man who needs a summer Friday, let me tell you.
Plus now we run this joint. Get the fuck out, Austin.
That's right. We hostile takeover.
Time to just finally be honest on this podcast.
We're going to be honest about Sonic.
I love anime.
Oh my God, it's a revelation. Patrick Klepek loves anime. You heard it here first.
Man,
here on Waypoint Radio.
You see someone drew me as a minion. What the fuck is this shit?
Someone drew you as a minion?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's a tough caricature. Do minions have hair?
They do now.
Okay. This one does, I guess. Yeah. Wow. Well, all right. I'm Danielle Riendo. You're hearing the voices of Patrick Klepek.
Hello.
Patrick Klepek the Minion, I guess? That's how we should introduce you?
Yeah, no? Probably. That's fine. I just embrace my new... This is who I am now.
Your minionhood?
Yeah, well, I'm probably going to see those movies like 9,000 times in the next couple of years, so whatever.
Oh, not God. If you never show them to your child. Like, this is the thing.
Right,
like,
right.
Just control access. Like, give them the good like movies that you can bear seeing again and again.
Yeah,
but never show them.
I can watch Moana a million times.
Yeah, Moana's great. There you go. Yeah.
Love that soundtrack. There
you go. But you can't, once you open the arc where they keep Cars, like, you're fucked.
I refuse to do Cars. I refuse to do Cars. I can't do
That's
it.
That's fair.
Be like, hey, sweetie, you know what's good? Ratatouille. Let's watch Ratatouille again.
See? Pixar mostly makes good things.
Let's watch The Iron Giant. That's a little bit sad, too.
Yeah. There's some weight there. There's some weight with that giant mech guy. He's sad.
Yeah,
That's very good.
Oh no, honey, WALL-E just ends when the humans show up.
It's just the end of that movie. Hey, that movie
everyone's fine.
It has a hopeful message at the very end as well.
True.
It's pretty hopeful. They return to the Earth. You know, it's spoilers for a 10-year-old movie. 9-year-old movie. I remember that. I know what's up. I know when these movies came out. Alright, so I want to talk about something very real. I want to talk about something that is heartfelt, apparently. It's a very heartfelt, surprisingly heartfelt thing. And that is the Madden single player mode.
Yeah, the long shot. There is, for the past, what is it, like maybe two or three years, like the EA has slowly been adding sort of like single player campaign type things to their sports games. Like, I think FIFA is getting it this year. No,
they've already had it.
Okay.
So
the NBA game has had it for a year or two or something?
Well, the NBA game hasn't been around years.
I'm thinking it was
2K's NBA game.
Spike Lee joint.
Yeah. Right.
I almost said
that
Spike
was
Jones.
That was like bananas, if I remember correctly. I didn't really play it, but I saw it.
Whatever you heard about it, it's weirder than you think. Like, I eventually looked it up on YouTube. I was like, come on, this has to be overstated. It is, if anything, understated. Like, I thought Alex Navarro's stream of consciousness, experience of it was overstated. I was like, there's no way this is true. I looked at it and literally it is every bit as strange and weird and does conclude with a mocapped actor reading a 25-minute printed monologue. That's how that ends. Somebody was like, yep, that's good, chip it.
That's amazing. Well, apparently the Madden one is more grounded and heartfelt. That's what I'm hearing from people. That's what I've been reading a little
bit. Do video games finally have their Friday Night Lights, Patrick?
Well, there's a straight up a character from Friday Night Lights, or an actor.
Wait, really?
What character did he play in... it's the kid. It's not a spoiler. It's from the first episode, but I forget the name of the character who gets injured and is in a wheelchair.
Adam, right? I think it's Adam. Is it not Adam? He looks like an Adam.
I can't. It's the guy. Yeah, it's the. I don't want to define this character by the. I mean, yeah,
right.
The guy. Yeah, he gets injured in the beginning. Matt Saracen takes over. I don't know why I can't remember what his name is, but that actor who is a big video game fan, like he's like been on a bunch of like IGN stuff and things.
Oh, cool.
He is one of the main characters in Longshot. Longshot is. It's called Longshot because the premise of the single player in the new Madden game is two guys who go out to one of the regional combines. So, like, the combines, for people who don't follow football, are, like, these events where players go and they run various drills and they're, like, measured and physicals. And that's where you hear, like, oh, we ran, like, a blank on a 40, you know, like, on a dash. And they get measured in all these different sort of things that scouts use to try and determine sort of the draft, like where they are going to fall in the draft coming a couple months later. And usually like a lot of the top prospects go there, but then it's also possible for you like to just sort of walk on and like prove yourself. Even if you're not one of those folks, it's like coming out of college. And of course you're going to be in the draft. It's just a matter of like you're in the first round or the fourth round or whatever. So these two guys, one a wide receiver and one a quarterback, who come from, like, a very rural Friday Night Lights sort of town. Like, the music often, it's not quite ripping off Explosions in the Sky, but they're, like, they're going for a similar vibe. The main character, the quarterback who you're playing as, he lost his mother and his father. He has this incident that I want to go into in which... He ends up walking away from football. He was going to be a top prospect and then just has like a meltdown over a series of a couple of games. And then rather than facing that, he just quits entirely. But then is convinced by his buddy who was like his wide receiver. Like he was the wide receiver that, he could always count on in every game. He drags him out to this combine and he does really well and then gets... Not only are there scouts there from NFL teams, but there are these talent scouts that are putting together this show called Longshot. And it's a reality show in which you get paired with a ex-NFL coach and like these facilities. And basically they want to try and take sort of a raw, rough prospect that and kind of like, give him if you gave him all the training and all the experience around him, like can you turn him in to somebody who gets picked up on draft day? And so that's sort of like the setup for this. There's a sort of reality show element, which explains like why you're in various football drills and stuff like that. And, then there are like these character moments, like one of the things that happens often in the NFL draft is, they're called intangibles, to use like a shitty NFL term, but it's sort of like the things that aren't, necessarily about your raw talent or skills or experience. This often speaks to like character traits, like leadership or how you handle yourself on like social media. Like famously, in the last two NFL drafts, there have been top five like would be picked in the top five prospects that have fallen out because of things they've been accused of or things that have been on social media. Sometimes that is really, really bad shit, like accusations of. Like physical assaults and things like that. But 2 years ago, there was famously a guy who some video of him ripping on a bong with a gas mask on dropped him precipitously in the draft. And so this game, the long shot has like some moments like this. Where, like for example, you pull off onto the side of the road when you're headed to the combine, and you can film your buddy like. Taking a piss on the side of the road to screw with him or not. And like the implication there is that has an impact on the scouting report because that'll be on social media. They'll find it. That was like some quote unquote, some reflection on your character. Because this is partnered with the NFL, they're not going to do the actual things that end up becoming these character traits that like force someone to fall in the draft order on draft day. It's going to be a lame video about peeing as opposed to like what actually ends up happening, which is usually like accusations of like sexual or physical assault or like someone ripping into a bong, which actually shouldn't have dropped during the draft because the NFL needs to fucking get over its marijuana problem.
Right.
Well, except, but the NFL is like about controlling its players. Yes. And I think that's the, like, does the game uncritically adopt this framing of these character issues, right? Because like Nick Capizzoli, freelance writer and noted
friend of the show, but also frenemy of the show because of what he did to you during Subterfuge.
Yeah, he's a good bad dude. but he wrote a really good post about career modes and how they sort of present those character issues and how there's often this like really racially charged component of that, right? Like what is acceptable behavior versus right. what is not is often in the eyes of rich conservative white ownership and not necessarily the players themselves. I'm just curious, like, does Longshot acknowledge that reality that like a lot of what you're going to get dinged for is fundamentally trivial bullshit?
I mean, yes and no. It's certainly like the moments where it's going on, like the couple of moments early on that can go on your record for sort of your scouting report are one that is like this, yeah, pulling over the side of the road and deciding to film your friend while he's pissing, or it's like live streaming in front of the combine logo when you should be going in and getting registered. Like it's all kind of the acts themselves are trivial. And aren't given that much weight. And I don't know, it's hard to tell, like, is the game making commentary on how trivial bullshit is actually used to, sort of like ruin draft prospects and where they should go in the draft, or are they not actually including the more legitimate scenarios that have impacted these players because, well, the NFL has to approve all this stuff because their right. logos are there, and they're not going to allow Electronic Arts to put in some dudes, ripping into a bong and getting dinged for it on draft day because that is the NFL has regressive policies in regards to drugs that, you know, like it's not going to point out contradictions in the NFL. Like, there's no discussion of concussions in Longshot. But like the main character is black and his best friend is white. It doesn't really get into racial dynamics that much, which is fine. Like just because the character is black doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be a story about race. But that's also like you can't really talk about the NFL without like talking about race either. It's charming, I guess, is what I would say. It is surprisingly emotional at times . Furthermore, like even separated from the story, they treat like this kid has raw talent, and they make that clear up front, but like little understanding of how to play football. Like there's a moment, Rob, where like they ask you to identify like players in positions, like this coach is asking like, hey, where's the safety? And then, like, you can get that wrong. And it's like, no kid that is actually going to have made it this far or have been, like, a QB in college, like, can't identify. But they play him. What they do is they're doing this narrative trick where they're making him seem less intelligent about the game of football. They call this football IQ, used another really lame NFL term that gets bandied around about. They play him down as less intelligent and justify it by narratively he was gone from the game from a couple of years. So that it actually functions as like a really interesting tutorial for like the more nuanced aspects of how NFL plays work out, where they'll sit down and break down for you like why you are throwing to different wide receivers based on the coverage you're seeing in front of you, like what the linebacker is doing or what the safety is doing. And as someone that watches a lot of football and like knows the difference between a cornerback and a safety, like I still don't know what like a nickel package is. And like this game walks you through sort of the framework mm-hmm. of a football game in a way that I found like super interesting and actually came away from it learning more about the game in a way that will tangibly impact my ability to enjoy watching NFL if I try and forget all the problems I have with concussions and the other things that are really bad about the NFL. But in terms of like the raw game, Longshot does a remarkable job of actually getting you to understand the intricacies other than just, hey, hit X, triangle or circle based on the guy who looks like he's open.
That is really cool. And that you just kind of sold me right there with
I wouldn't buy this game for it. It's like 3 hours long, 4 hours long. Like we're not talking about something that's it's a value add to this game,
right?
But if there was, they should sell Longshot by itself. Like if this was a $15 little thing, I think a lot of people would be into it. That would not, like, I'm not going to play the rest of Madden. I'm not going to play a season. Like I'm not going to do any of that stuff. But I enjoyed Longshot. I would have liked it if it was twice as long. I would have loved if it followed his career past draft day. And there was more of that sort of...
Well, does it feel like it's over? Because what they did with FIFA is that it's an ongoing story, right? That, right. Like, the first year was sort of the origins of Alex, whatever his name is. And then this year, you're sort of seeing his fall from... not fall from stardom, but, like, definitely he makes some career decisions that, like, come across badly. Does it feel like Longshot is going to be continuing the career saga of this character?
They allow you to, like, plug him into... I forget what it says at the end, but, like, there's... the actual story mode where you're, like, getting cutscenes and, like, they're telling a very specific narrative, like, that disappears once you finish, like, this 3 to 4 hour chunk, and then you can just, like, take that character forward into, like, an NFL season. I don't know how that would be possible based on how my draft day went. It didn't go as well as I wanted to, and apparently I don't know what the what the variety is there. My understanding is, like, there's a lot of different ways that draft day can go. My guides, he could have done better.
Oh, no.
He could have done better, but it was very appropriate and touching. Like, the arc of how draft day went for him felt in line with the character I played and the ups and downs I had in, like, performing the challenges that were asked of me. And it's just, I really wish they would split this out and let people play it, or just straight up, like, there's, like, a world where they could start splitting Madden in two in some ways, where it's like there's, like, a 3 hour single player trial in here, but, like, there's a much larger sports game. Like, I think they're on to something here. Like, I have not played a Madden game in 8 years, and I just played 4 hours, enjoyed it, and want to play more. I just don't want to go play a season. Or, like, if I'm going to play a season, I want it wrapped in a context that is more than just the games themselves, because this is flawed. It's kind of hokey, and you don't have a lot of impact on the story, but they're onto something that gripped me in a way that I would like to see them do more of it.
Isn't it a lot of the draw for, again, I am not, like, a mega fan of football. I enjoy it. I am interested in it. And I've always been sort of looking for another hook. And it sounds like this could actually be amazing for me to understand the nuances of the game, because a lot of people are pretty grossed out by a lot of NFL culture stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously. Find the game itself really, really interesting and exciting, obviously. Isn't that part of the draw for watching a lot of games for a lot of fans? Is, you know, you have players that you like, you have teams that you like, obviously. You want to follow that. You want that hook to sort of keep you invested in the game itself. Or am I misreading certain types of fandom?
Interesting. Like, no, I think, like, and this is just my take on it, and you disagree, Patrick, but, like, I kind of feel, with the exception of a few players who are allowed to become, like, mega stars, like, you know, your Tom Brady's, your Peyton Manning's, who are, like, you know, they become major storylines in and of themselves, or even someone like Jay Cutler, right? It becomes a character for a different reason, right? That's a different sort of story that, like, people are fascinated by. But the outside of the quarterback position, the game, like, football makes it really hard for players to sort of stand out and emerge as personalities. Like,
they wear
conduct
masks
guidelines.
The whole time.
You're right, yeah.
And like they didn't used to, but they've really shut down on, like, now you cannot remove your helmet, like, on the field of play. And partly that, like, that was passed as a safety thing, but, like, the real thing that the NFL has pushed aggressively for years and years is to de-individualize players and make the team, what they call the shield, right? The NFL shield. Mm-hmm. Make the logo, the team, the league, the face of football, and make the players as interchangeable and faceless as possible, which is not... It was not, that was not a neutral thing, right? That was, like, intentionally done.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Even if you were to separate the NFL's politics outside of that, like, because you just, you know, it's why, you know, things like basketball, there are so many players that are known even to people through cultural osmosis, is because it's a much more intimate game, like, because you can identify, it's a smaller pool of players, but also you can see the players, so they become characters in of themselves. Yeah. And that's just not true of football. Like, there are a lot of people on the field, they're all in masks, and the only person that matters on every single play is the quarterback. So a lot of people through cultural osmosis understand different quarterbacks and could name them even if they're not a big fan of football. But Yeah, there's that. It's just kind of the nature of football kind of anonymizes players, both from a political stance and then also just by the nature of kind of how the game has gone from a safety perspective. But yeah, it's I never knew how plays were structured, like in the sense of like the code words and why there are five code words attached to a play, and like each of those is a reference to a different part. It's just, yeah, it's just fascinating. Like, as someone, I think lots of people that watch football don't actually care about the mechanics of football, and it's more of a tribal thing, or a familial, sort of like cultural thing. But I, especially as someone that plays, you know, games and likes understanding systems, it's, and I never played football growing up. It is fascinating now to have a little better understanding of like what everyone is yelling and realizing, like, oh, the third part of that, it tells the wide receiver which way to line up. And yeah, so long shot, interesting. I would, well worth playing if you're buying Madden anyway. I hope they split it out. They probably won't. But if that game gets cheaper down the line, it's worth watching a YouTube Let's Play of, like, to see what it's about.
Yeah, definitely. Rob, I know you've been wading into a couple of different seas here. I've heard a little bit about this Total Wormhammer business that you've been
Wormhammer?
Into.
Total Wormhammer?
Wormhammer. It's Wormhammer. You have to warm up your hammer. It's like how you make a sword, you know, you warm it up.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it's called, right?
It's like Quap, but for metal forging, yeah.
There you absolutely go, yeah, Wormhammer. Exactly.
yeah, so I've gone back to Total War Warhammer because they just... So I have mixed feelings about this, but there has never been a Total War game where Creative Assembly embraced microtransactions so aggressively. Mm. And so, like, when the game originally launched, every Total War game has a grand campaign. This was probably the least grand-feeling grand campaign I've ever played in the series, where, like, the map just felt kind of small and compressed, and it, like, no sooner had you sort of expanded a little bit of your territory than you were, like, really sort of pushing up against other factions, and then sort of endgame events were triggering. Yeah, so it just felt like kind of the proverbial knife fight in a phone booth. and...
I'm just picturing this with orcs is why I'm laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I see two orcs in a phone booth trying to knife each other and snot on each other, and it's a very amusing image.
Yeah, it's basically how the game felt at launch. And it was fun. I liked it.
Didn't the last game have, like, some DLC problems where, like, they were... Like, haven't they, like, had some issues the last couple of years as they've tried to incorporate additional revenue streams into their game and, like, run into a lot of fucking problems with their community?
Yeah, yeah. And I think some of that comes from... They used to do a lot of standalone expansions. So, you know, Rome 2 begets Attila. It's a separate game, but it still feels, like, of a piece with Rome. But then they would also have a lot of, like, small DLCs, and a lot of these were maybe too small. Feeling, right? Where it would, like, unlock a faction for you, but it wasn't that exciting, or you'd unlock a special unit for a faction. So, like, in Total War, for instance, there was, like, you could in Empire Total War, you could unlock the Death's Head Hussars or something like that. This one regiment that served the Prussians in the 1700s. And you'd, like, pay a few bucks for, like, a unit pack with these four regiments that probably maybe don't mean anything to you. And it just feels kind of like small time and shitty. With Total War Warhammer, they've kind of tried everything all at once. And so some of it's really clever. Like, they've rolled out new expansions, new factions. And each faction, the major faction expansions, also include, like, a little mini campaign for that faction. So there's, like, a little bespoke piece of content for that faction, and then also that faction is now part of the original grand campaign. And so over time, this game has gotten a whole lot bigger. There are now multiple campaigns where there used to be just, like, one overarching campaign, and there's a bunch more factions packed into this world, which is probably two or three times bigger than it originally was. And it also got a little out of hand, because as they added all this stuff in, they didn't necessarily balance it well as they went. Mm-hmm. So they just released a major update called the Foundation Update that basically retools every faction and how they balance against each other and how that the grand campaign map is set up. And so I decided, like, hell, let's see how much this game has changed. And it does legitimately feel like an entirely new game. Now, I bought some of that DLC in the meantime, so you know, I wasn't starting from the base set in Warhammer, but to give you an example, like, so I started a new campaign, and there was a new clan of dwarves, basically, that I could choose to play. And basically, their whole faction gimmick is that they're kind of the dwarves of Moria, I guess is the way you'd put it. Like, they've been driven out from, like, the most glorious ancestral home of dwarf kind, and so they're just, like, pissed about it. They're so pissed that a bunch of their dead heroes and kings have come back from the dead as ghosts to come, like, fuck up goblins. And your whole mission is to basically go to your old ancestral home, kick the shit out of the goblins that are there, and then start, like, a new glorious dwarf empire. But in the meantime, everyone is so angry that your army can has to fight on the move. You can't pause and build up because your upkeep costs are super high since you basically have no homeland. And so it's really, like, it's completely different. Like, I played a different dwarf game when the game came out, a different faction. These guys feel completely different. The ghost dwarves are pretty cool, I'm not going to lie. Like, they look cool, they're really badass. But the big thing is, the map is, like, the game board is completely different. And so you start the game, and I was used to the game looking one way, and now it's like, oh, this has gotten, you know, several times more complicated than it used to be. And there's a hell of a lot of new stuff that I've never seen before. And so it's really cool going back to it, because it kind of feels like it's finally delivering on the promise of Total War Warhammer. On the other hand, where I get ambivalent is they've got so, like, it was originally a $60 game. If you want everything that's in that game, and I do not feel that original offer was particularly generous, so it's not like I'm sitting here like, oh, you got your money's worth with your, you know, everything else is just gravy. Right,
yeah.
I kind of felt like the original game was a little bit claustrophobic, a little bit thin on the ground, and to get all this new stuff, if you want it, it's all of varying quality, so you kind of have to do a little research as you buy it. But it does kind of feel like the situation where you buy the game twice. And I know why, like, obviously there are a lot of good reasons why games have gone this direction. But at the same time, like, when you launch into this game, if you haven't played it in a while, the first thing that happens is the game starts hitting you with all these notifications. Like, you know, you can buy this, this, and this. You want to leave the game and go figure out what the hell we're trying to sell you? Sure, that sounds like a great idea.
Oh, God. It sounds like they should have gone the No Man's Sky route, potentially, of, you know, sort of quietly overhauling things and just adding things in and being like, here, we made it better. Look, we did it.
Yeah, this is like a hardcore established community. I think that's why there's the grievance here, right? Like, it's like they were bought, Creative Assembly was bought by Sega at this point, what, like a decade ago? Like,
it's been a number of years, yeah.
But like in the last couple of years, as Sega has gotten more and more into the PC community, like, and rather successfully, you know, like, they, you know, some good PC ports, and, you know, they've basically left Creative Assembly alone. But it's like, this has quietly become like kind of a shitstorm for them, where like, it's hard to tell, like, are they just fucking up the implementation? Like, is there a way for them to do this? Like, it's, but they seem to be creating, like, they're clearly making good games still, but they're creating a lot of bad feelings, like, along the way in the pursuit of money.
Yeah, but I don't know if anybody can really make an extensive DLC plan look and feel successful. Like, Paradox have done it pretty effectively, but if you follow the conversations that happen around Paradox Online a lot, they get dragged for their DLC packs a ton by their community. And to a degree, this does feel like it's become the price of doing business, right? Like, you know, they complain, but they buy. Right. And that's kind of where this has ended up.
Keep doing it if they weren't making money out of it. Like, they would stop the business. Like, they wouldn't do these DLC packages a second time if it wasn't profitable the first time. And so people, yeah, you're right. Like, people complain, but they're buying the stuff, which is, I mean, if you're a fan, like, I get the conundrum you're in. Like, if you want that race, or if you want, you know, like, that's just a thing you have to do, but it creates a reward structure that is just going to keep, you know, the fury may rise up, but, well, the next thing comes around and it's going to be the same idea, just tweaked a little bit.
It's also a little bit of a weird look around Warhammer specifically, because there is that Games Workshop history and reputation that mm-hmm. goes with it, where Games Workshop, like, again, people enjoy their properties, but, like, kind of hate that company in a lot of ways, because it was a really, you know, avaricious and, you know, stingy company. And so I think, you know, it's an unfortunate...
Can you remind us of some of their games? For the completely uninitiated, what a...
Like, oh, yeah, like, Games Workshop equals all things Warhammer. Okay, so gotcha. Warhammer 40K... Chaos in the Old World, they did some partnerships with Fantasy Flight, but yeah, so like Games Workshop is the Warhammer company, basically. They make other games that are sort of Warhammer adjacent, but like if you boil it down, like it's all about Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40K. And the reputation they developed is that they would basically overcharge you for everything. They were very much, they were not even like a first hit is free kind of business model. It was more first hit is like reasonable, but still like kind of pricey. And then to do anything with it, you start like paying through the nose. So it was very much like rich kids and increasingly probably rich middle-aged dudes toys. And yeah. So having this DLC model come up around Total War Warhammer is definitely going to evoke some of those memories of like how much Games Workshop sometimes destroyed the goodwill and the fun of being a Warhammer fan. If you want to know more about this, by the way, like Ian Williams wrote a great piece about this around the release of Warhammer 40K's 8th edition rule set. And he's on one level talking about Warhammer 40K as it exists now, but then he's also looking at it from where this update exists in Games Workshop history. So he's been part of that scene. He's been way more part of that scene than I am. But it's a good article that gives you a lot of the sort of kind of crappy background around Warhammer.
Nice.
But the game's cool, man. I got Ghost Dwarves, and they're like just kicking the shit out of goblins.
Stop. Why the fuck didn't you start with that?
I mentioned
they're so angry. They're so angry they're back.
What kind of powers do these ghost doors have?
One appears to have like a giant ass shotgun that he just like unloads in a herd of goblins.
Uh-huh. No, like actual specific ghost powers?
No, they're basically just like ghost skins on dudes. They're not like they occupy physical space and they're basically like, you know, just ghostly looking like standard dwarf heroes, but it's still pretty cool.
Yeah.
Sell that as an expansion. Give me some more ghost power. The ghost powers DLC.
It's rare that a game is not to benefit from ghosts. You know, I'm sure there's a few out there that wouldn't, but I don't know.
Ghosts the original Fear did not benefit from ghosts. I feel confident saying that. Like Monolith Fear, better pre-ghosts.
Like I said, there's exceptions to this rule. I made the room for exceptions for this for sure. But ghosts are pretty cool. So I want to talk a little bit about one game that I've been playing, and then I want to close out our talking about games section with a beautiful adventure that Patrick, I know you're having as well. But I briefly want to note a game called Observer that I've been playing.
Yeah,
I need to play that.
Yeah, it is. Oh man, it's awesome and incredibly dark and actually pretty scary.
I didn't realize this is the Layers of Fear studio, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Team Bloober Team, I think, actually, they have a really interesting history. So they're the first game I became aware of that they made was a horrible Bomberman clone for the PS4 launch that they later, it's called Basement Crawl, but they later sort of remade their own game. They remade their own game into like a really good Bomberman clone for the PS4 and then made Layers of Fear, which is like, whoa, that's interesting. They made like this sort of PT style, but not PT themed, really, but like, you know, after a fashion of PT where it's just walking around and looking at things in a horror environment, basically, but much more melodramatic, I guess you would say. This story was very out there.
Now, I heard mixed things about that too. Like, that's one reason I think this flew under my radar.
Yeah, I did. I played maybe 90 minutes of Layers of Fear, and it did like very little for me. It felt like it was playing in a sandbox that I'd seen, like the haunted. I'd seen all of those. Like, artistically, it looked gorgeous, yeah. But the sort of haunted house motifs it was playing with was like, I mean, obviously I'm as cynical and burned as they come when it comes to horror. Like, it takes a lot, but it also, like, also means like, yo, you got to come at me with your A game if you're going to put this haunted house bullshit in front of me. And so it showed a lot of promise. I had never ended up playing more than like 90 minutes, 'cause it just didn't do a lot for me, but I've heard really good things about, do you want to like set up like, I know it's like cyberpunk horror.
Absolutely,
like,
absolutely.
What does that mean?
So, well, first thing you need to know about it, Rutger Hauer is the voice of the protagonist.
Well, then you can just stop there. Everyone should just go play
Observer. All you need to know. Well, it's in this very, very dark, I want to say Blade Runner, but like 40 shades darker universe. A cyberpunk universe where there was a horrible war, there was a horrible plague, and now a corporation, of course, runs the government and basically keeps its citizens in extreme social stratification. There, you have to go to a Class C apartment where the Class C citizens live because you got a weird call from your son, and you are like a cop. You are basically, you're an observer, which means you have certain cybernetic enhancements that let you do detective work. That's sort of the fiction. You go to this apartment building, and of course it's falling apart and it's horrible, and that's really where the game starts in earnest. And you have, in terms of gameplay, you have these sort of two filters of basically detective vision. One is to look for biological things in any given area, and the second is to look for tech things, things you can hack, things you can scan, and you can basically jack into people's brains, into their, like, brain implant, and relive some of their memories, which, if somebody was brutally murdered, you can imagine how much fun that is.
I thought you were like, speaking as someone... That's like, as someone who's been brutally murdered, let me tell you
about my brutal murder. It's really, really dark. Like, it's one of those, let's just say it starts out with like an incredibly graphic allusion to suicide, and like from there it gets a lot darker. It's bad stuff. It is bad things that a, you know, very amoral corporate government will do to citizens who don't, you know, they don't really have much value for human life. And so there you are in this world. Incredibly dark, incredibly compelling. It works as both a mystery and just sort of an aesthetic exercise of like, how bad can things be in a bad system of government? Well, let me show you. Like, it's, oh man. Yeah, so there is a sequence where you jack into somebody's brain who was a former prisoner and a former drug addict, and that's where the most sort of horror imagery comes from.
Oh, this is like Strange Days, the game.
A lot, yeah. At least in sort of this portion of the game, or this style of gameplay, and you have to kind of live through some of his worst memories, basically. It's bad. It's really
Are those
bad.
Memories like... Not to get all like, you know, tell you what the features of this awful thematic content.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I'm just curious, like, is it more like cutscenes, or is it more like you are exploring the memories?
You're exploring the memories.
Okay.
It's very, this portion of the game is very Layers of Fear or PT, where mm-hmm. you're kind of going through areas and kind of figuring out what to look at or what to do next, a little puzzle style. And really terrible, possibly impossible things are happening during all of this. But it's very grounded. It's not... Layers of Fear, I think, was, like, four levels into the stratosphere with, like, the mad painter and his weird family. And, like, I enjoy camp a lot, so I had a lot of fun with it. But this is much more grounded. This is, like, there's murder, and there's mistreatment of prisoners, and there's a whole lot of abuse, and there's a whole lot of... This is how bad things could be if we all became cybernetic and our implants sucked because the people who supplied them didn't make much money off of us. So it's
well, this is
it's
like
rough. Yeah.
Since Austin's not here,
I'm sad he can't. I think he should play it too because cyberpunk obviously is his thing.
But like, because I think a lot of cyberpunk runs into that problem where like even as it's trying to raise issues and concerns, it's also simultaneously trying to seduce you with like a techno romanticism that is sometimes like really ill placed. And I'm curious, like, does this game successfully evade that trap of Cyberpunk?
I think it does. Because I think this is... there's something I might or might not be working on for the site. And this is where, Patrick, I'm going to take your advice for, you know, doing a draft, basically, while I'm here talking. And then actually write that draft. But I think it is Cyberpunk that is dark enough to be Cyberpunk in 2017 to what early 80s Cyberpunk was to the early 80s. Like, this is actually like 100 times darker of a vision for the dark times that we live in now, basically. Like, it does have the nice sort of visual flair of something like Blade Runner, but you never feel comfortable in this world. I always felt sort of nauseated in this world the same way I did in Soma, where, yeah, a lot of things maybe were cool. Maybe there were some cool aspects of this technology, but everything is used for ill. Everything is terrible and everything is bad. You know, like, the brain hacking is never like a fun, cool thing that you can do with your friends. No, it's somebody is like on their last legs and you're hacking into their brain to try to see if you can find who did this to them. It's that sort of thing. And it's all unpleasant.
That's cool, because that was one of my favorite parts of Soma was like the bat that, yo, technology, maybe it's bad or can be bad.
Yeah.
And that, like, how it explored the consequences of technology going bad or going in cruel directions is, that sounds fascinating, because that was my favorite part of Soma. And so if Observer is playing in that space, that, and doesn't have, I'm not running from big monsters for no reason, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's not to say there are no monstrous figures in this, but it's a right. very different type of game.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
For sure. Right. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. The only thing that I think is maybe a little cheesy, there are sort of interrogations you do at people's apartment doors. So in this world, everybody's kind of locked down in their apartment. Especially poor folks, they don't have much freedom to kind of move around, and you're sort of talking to people through their doors. And there's a few of those sequences that are, like, really hammy. Like there's a guy yelling at his kids, he's just like, shut up already! And it's very, like, okay, maybe that wasn't necessary, but I don't think it detracts much. And again, I sort of enjoy camp, so I didn't mind it, but that's the only thing that isn't, like, really hardcore depressing about this game. And I think on a completely opposite direction, I'm also playing a game that is the opposite of hardcore depressing, which is Uncharted Lost Legacy. We can talk about this as of yesterday, so I think it's cool to talk about it today. And Patrick, I know you're playing it too, so I'll just give the quick setup and then maybe we can chat about it for a second. But this is Uncharted. It's basically Uncharted 4, honestly. Generally the same gameplay. You know, you're climbing things, you're stealthing around before you start shooting guys, and you're having really good banter with your other character. The thing that's different about this one, there's kind of two things that are different. The first is that the characters are really great. It's Chloe, who is voiced by Claudia Black, and is sort of the awesome thief lady from Uncharted 2 and 3. And Nadine, who was she was actually like a boss character in Uncharted 4, who just kicks Nathan Drake's ass. And they're together on their own cool adventure, and that's really cool. And it also has some actually not quite open world, but much more large and open areas to actually investigate and go look for things, and you have the freedom to kind of go and find secrets. Whereas the previous Uncharted games were almost always extremely linear. 4 did have a few sections that were a little bit more open, but this is wide, wide open, at least at certain parts. So
yeah, I mean, these games are defined by their streamlined, hold you by the hand cinematic nature. Like that is part of the DNA of Uncharted, or at least has been for a long time. And actually, like, yeah, There were some sequences in Uncharted 4 where, like, you get in the Jeep and you could kind of drive around in a space, but you were still mostly going from point A to point B. What they set up in Lost Legacy is, like, a pretty for Uncharted standards, a pretty wide open space in which you have three different temples you need to investigate in order to proceed to the next area. And you can kind of go about that in whatever order you want. You'll run into, soldiers along the way. They give you a reason to explore some of the nooks and crannies because there's sort of like a separate fourth temple where you have to collect 11 items. And those 11 items are like hidden away in kind of puzzly locations. So you have like an incentive to kind of go exploring, because often in Uncharted, because everything is so handcrafted and beautiful, there's not really a lot of incentive to look around, because the expectation is you're going to see the stuff the developers want you to see because they'll take you there.
Yeah.
Going to find the little treasures as a collectible, I guess, is one incentive, but that doesn't really work for me because I don't care about those collectibles by and large. Whereas in this, like, I am incentivized and interested in exploring because I want to go solve the puzzles. I want to go see what the game is hiding, to if I might get, like, you know, some sort of secret. Like, that's an objective that I find more fulfilling than just getting 60 collectibles for a trophy. And what I kind of hope is that this is an experimentation in trying to expand what a Naughty Dog game is, and taking in elements of not quite open world, but larger spaces. So, like, if this is a test run for a larger idea for, like, let's say The Last of Us 2, like, that's really exciting, especially because I cannot stand the combat in the Uncharted games. It drives me up a wall. Like, the moment shooting starts, if I could pay $5 to just not do it anymore, like, I detest the combat, and I apologize if there's anyone on this podcast that I'm sorry I don't like your combat. It doesn't do anything for me, and I actually loathe it and do not enjoy participating in it. But I like the combat a lot in The Last of Us. I really enjoyed the dynamic they had set up in that game, especially relative to the Uncharted game. So the question, or the idea that, like, these larger open spaces could be part of what is coming in The Last of Us 2 gets me really, really excited. And to your point earlier of the banter, like, the story it proposed so far in Lost Legacy, I've played maybe 3 or 4 hours. Like, it's whatever. Like, it's it's just a reason to go on an adventure. But the characters, like, the banter between the two women is so good and funny and interesting, and I can't get enough of it. And so for that, on those two levels of, like, the banter between the characters and the experimentation Naughty Dog is doing to expand the kinds of games they have made in the last 10 years or so, it seems worth playing for both of those things, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, it almost feels a little bit like maybe this started life as story DLC. I don't actually know that. I'm not proposing.
I think they have said that it was supposed to be pretty short. And then they just decided, they just kept growing in scope.
Just make
and then
a game.
Became like this 8-hour thing. And that's why I think it's $40 and not
$60. It's not a $60 product, which is cool. I also agree, like, experimenting a little bit with that formula is great, since this is the fifth main Uncharted game. I know there was a PSP game as well. I didn't ever play that, but yeah, it's really cool. And to your point about the banter, there was actually, I don't want to spoil anything, but there was a really lovely part where they actually sort of acknowledged, like, hey, you know what? It's really nice to work with another woman for once. And they had a little bit of banter about being, like, mansplained to, which was fucking awesome, because it's these two characters who are both, you know, one's like this slippery thief and the other's like this hard ass militant person, and they bounce off each other in these really wonderful ways. But once they start kind of getting along, the banter gets even better, and it's lovely. There's only like one little potential issue there, and it is, so these are two women of color in this game, and I could be wrong, but I think they're voiced by white women, and it's one of those where it's like, oh, diverse, you know, like,
yeah,
oh, yes, definitely, you know, this is so awesome, two women of color, like, heading a fairly large budget video game, and then it's like, oh, right, and look, don't get me wrong, Claudia Black, I'm, like, number one Claudia Black fan on Earth, like, got my little, like, card-carrying Claudia Black fan club card right here, but that is a little bit of a bummer when I sort of found that out, that it was like, oh, right, okay, that's, So
Yeah.
It's one of those two steps forward, one step back kind of deals that I do think is worth acknowledging. And I'm sure this will be a larger discussion at some other point. But yeah, wanted yeah, to this just mention
like,
that.
I believe Neil Druckmann...
did he address it at some point?
Not for this game, but when like when it came up for Uncharted 4, I can't remember. I mean, I think his explanation, I'm paraphrasing, you know, it fell along the lines of, well, like the what's amazing about digital characters is anyone can play any character, which I get it.
Yeah.
But it's also more complicated than that. And
right.
You have to acknowledge that it's a little bit weird.
Yeah.
It's not the same. Like, it's not blackface, but it's complicated.
But it's also not hiring an actress of color to play a woman of color. Like, it's also you know, that part of it, so.
Yes, yes. So, one small thing that I really like about this game is, you know, you have this AI companion who will, fight along with you, and normally in these games, they don't really do much else. Like, they're there to maybe shoot some enemies, but otherwise they're kind of just there for banter, and... I don't remember this happening in Uncharted 4, and I don't really remember this happening in, like, any game I've played with an AI character. But, like, so, for example, there's a sequence where you have to go find five, you know, objects you have to push order for a door to open. And so I'm off, you know, I found three of them, and then on the other side of the map, she announces, like, hey, I found one, I'll push it for you.
Yeah.
And, like, she did it. And there was another time where... you're often, you know, driving around this Jeep and you're attaching the Jeep with a rope to, like, the door so you can, like, winch them down so you can progress forward. And one time, the other character was just like, hey, I got this. Like, I'll do it. And it was like, it made the characters feel so more real, as though they are actual characters and not just someone that lines up a gun every once in a while. It's like they were doing the things that my character was doing, and they were helping me advance the, you know, goofy Indiana Jones objective of having to find five of these objects and to turn them. And it was nice. Like, I wish more games had their characters actually accomplishing meaningful things, because it was a small thing, but it added a lot to the way I connected with the characters and in the game itself.
Absolutely. And she's really useful in combat too. She actually does a lot of stealth kills. Like, there have been times where, you know, you're playing as Chloe and I'm just, like, hiding out in the grass, and Nadine will just go up and kill, you know, stealth kill, like, three guys while I'm just sitting there. And it's like, hey, thanks. That's pretty useful. And that also helps a little bit with, you know, crappy gun combat, because she can do some of the work, and that's pretty nice. So, totally agree. All right, we're probably only going to have time for one question bucket question. So, so Patrick, you have a number in your head between one, and we're actually getting pretty far through this. Maybe at 53. 1 in 53.
Okay. Say it was Uncharted 4, so 40. what's like a number I can attach? We'll just do 40. 40.
All right. This is Daniel from Tacoma, the space station, I'm assuming. I have a hypothetical that I'm curious to hear your thoughts. A lot of software and hardware has gone from the purchase business model to the leasing model. And generally, this comes from a business wanting to make something that requires higher manufacturing costs while still having a low barrier to entry for the average public. A good example, most people carry around a smartphone with an MSRP of somewhere between $500 and $600 because they can simply pay $20 to $30 a month fee for it. My question, let's assume the next generation of consoles comes out in a few years with this kind of business model. This is a higher quality device with a higher cost. And as such, you're given two options for your gaming experience. One, you pay the upfront cost of $500 to get your console and pay any monthly charges for internet associated with it along with the standard costs of games. You can pay a calculated monthly fee that includes the console as well as online fees and premium services that tend to come with consoles automatically bundled in. And I'm assuming the other option is to... Right. Okay. So you lump them both in there. But yeah, we understand. The upfront one or the, you know, pay every month. Which option would you choose? Especially the second option is what a cell provider or cable provider... does currently. And bonus question, would you pay a higher monthly fee to get new game releases as well? Keep in mind that since you're leasing all of the software, If at any point you cancel, you cannot go back and play any old games used through that account.
I think it's inevitable, and there were rumors leading up to the release of the Xbox One that Microsoft was going to engage in some sort of subscription service as a means of getting more people to pay for a high-priced video game box with a monthly fee who don't have, you know, there are probably a lot of casual players that don't have as many hang-ups over, like, licensing and ownership of games. Like, that's something that's pretty specific to, like, people who are very into video games. There's probably a demographic of people that would be okay paying, you know, $12 a month to lease an Xbox One and lose access to those games when you stop paying the subscription. I think that's inevitably coming at some point to video games. And I don't know if that means it'll be successful, but I think at some point there's going to be a hardware manufacturer that decides to play around with the idea of leasing out hardware as a means of getting it to a wider audience. I mean, I would never do that. I mean, starting with this cycle of like phones, me and my wife decided to just buck up and pay for it all up front, which is extremely expensive. But then you're not paying any of the interest over 2 years and you can sell it at any time. And so I'm more of the, I'd rather just pay for it. I want that. You know, even as I just said that, there's probably an audience for leasing it. Yeah, I'm not that audience. I would just give it to me. I want to pay for it, and I don't want to deal with any of the bullshit that goes with, like, what do I own and what do I not own? But,
I think go ahead, Rob.
Well, I think a hurdle for this, too, is just, like, the other thing we saw with the Xbox One rollout is that, like, players tend to be really conservative when it comes to, like, what video game consumption and purchasing and ownership looks like. And so there are built-in expectations at this point that it's going to be hard to sell people on that idea, because I think players tend to be very sensitive to this idea that somehow they're going to be screwed in a deal like this, which, by the way, they probably will be on some level. Like, this deal would be like tuned to be more exploitative than not. Like, that's kind of how this would work.
You're going to pay more money for something that you probably could get cheaper if you can pay for it up front. I mean, that's the nature of how these you know, they're not selling it at a loss. You know, they're you only devise a service like this because you think you can make more money off of someone.
Right. So, like, I just think that while I am certain there are a lot of smart people in the console business who would love to get things to move in this direction, I also think that trying to get players to give up on the idea of them having their games is going to be a tough sell. And so you'd really have to sweeten that pot quite a bit before people, like, get rid of the idea of having a collection.
But I think that this way, like, I think Microsoft's moment for this was when they made their original pitch for the Xbox One. And I think this would have, they made a lot of really weird, questionable decisions at that time. But imagine if when they had announced the Xbox One, they also announced a partnership with Comcast. And what the partnership entailed was that instead, you know, for an additional $30 a month, you don't get a cable box. You get an Xbox One that is your cable box. And then that's bundled into your subscription, and you're getting access through Comcast, like, a handful of, like, free games a month, and you can also buy games that you can play on your Xbox One. But it's like, hey, you get your TV and your game machine all at once, and you're only adding, you know, $30 a month or whatever would have been, like, the fee that they'd be charging for that combined box. Like, that would have made a lot of sense for the vision they were pitching for that machine back then, when it was, like, very much a media TV device.
But who is your partner that works for that? Because people hate their cable provider. Like, it's one of those things where, like, that might be the way to go, except then the problem is you still got to stand there on a stage and be like, good news, everybody, you now have to get Comcast. You're welcome. Like, that's just not going to fly, right? So
I think, like, Sony, like, had a moment like that, like, years ago where they announced, like, a partnership AT&T. With, like, AT&T for the Vita, and they... I think, like, the executive actually got fucking booed on stage by, like, a group of, like, press and fans for, like, announcing an AT&T partnership. I think it was Kaz Hirai got booed for the AT&T thing. I want to say that's true.
I think you're right. Oh, God. Yeah, I have to admit, in all of this, I am an old person who hates all of the bullshit. I hate contracts that I don't have to keep, you know, to keep an eye on. Like, it's just the least amount of hassle in my life, the happier I'm going to be. I also only ever want one machine ever, and it plays everything, and I can play everything on a controller because I can't really use a mouse and keyboard. So I don't know how useful my opinion is in any of this, but I suppose I side with the whole idea of, like, yep, I like having my collection. I still have my NES games. Like, I have my NES, I have my SNES, I have my Dreamcast, I have my N64. I have every game I've ever owned still, and I like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think there are most, I think most people want things to be simple, and I think the pitch for this would be that it makes it simple, but I think instinctively we would know that it is not, right? Yeah. Like, the reason I need to pay, like, installment plan for my phone or something, well, I used to, and then I discovered the wonderful world of cheapo phones, which, by the way, are awesome, but, like, you know, like, buying a car is scary, but you have to deal with that bullshit because, like, it's a really expensive thing that you probably can't afford up front. A console is one of those things that is within reach of, like, a few months of saving. You might be able to buy one of these things, and then you don't have to think about it again. Whereas this model, I mean, all of us know at this point how this story ends, and it's with, like, you know, your e-bill changing one month and not knowing why, right? Yeah. Or having to call and be like, so why is my video game subscription?
I'm going to switch to PlayStation if you don't bring down the monthly cost of my Xbox.
Well, sir, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. Can I ask what aspect of your service you're unhappy with? And maybe we can resolve that right here.
I want you, like, to keep going with this.
Talk, yeah, through, like, five different, yeah, talk through, like, five different layers of customer service just to, like, try to get back to what you were originally paying. No, to hell with that.
It's, oh, God, yeah. It's giving me anxiety just thinking about this, about thinking about our dark future where everything is a different contract and monthly bill. And it makes me, yeah, it gives me agina. Let's just put it that way, all right? do we have time for one more? Or do we want to call it a day? What do we think?
We're at an hour. We should probably.
All right. Let's call that a day. Let's call Ajna a day. I think that's probably pretty good. Well, you know, we talked about a lot of happy things too, so it's all right. We're doing all right. We're doing good. It's Friday. I'm very excited that it's Friday. I'm excited again that Austin is taking a summer Friday, and we're going to do our usual goodbye. So, Rob, where can we find you online?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
Fantastic. Patrick, how about you?
Find me at Patrick Lepic.
Fantastic. I'm at Danielle R.I. on Twitter. And I want to thank you, dear listeners, for listening to our podcast. Please do read our articles. You can find them all. Waypoint.vice.com, digitalpyramids.com. I think there's a discourse.zone that goes to our stuff. That's a good one, too. Easy to remember, you know? new.donk.city, all kinds of beautiful custom URLs that you can go to, and they all go to our articles, and we do appreciate it if you do your reading. That's your summer reading assignment, basically. Want to say thank you to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine. We want to thank all of you for following us on Twitter at Waypoint. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook Vice. Excuse me, Waypoint Vice. Wow, I am falling apart at the end of this episode. I'm so sad to be leaving. You know what I'm saying? I'm having so much fun podcasting that I'm sad to be leaving. But I guess that means I should just end it and say, be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.